Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is App Chats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSat certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and when he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Yeah, that kind of sounds scary, doesn't it? Absolutely. It sounds scary to know that you're going to hear everything. And I know that you sat and said to yourself, why am I in this position? What is going on? Why would God do this to me? And how do I get through it? Well, there is no doubt about it that today we have a very partner-sensitive woman, and she's a therapist, and she has really wanted to talk about how you can feel better about yourself after you get through this journey of disclosures and discovery, and as you begin to go, what is my journey going to be like? What am I going to be doing? How do you create your own transformative experience? That's what she's going to be talking about today. And that is so important. There is just no doubt about it. And I'm so happy to have her on the air. And, you know, I want to tell my listening audience, we've got a lot of help out there. And it's not just for you. It's also for your husbands. I've got a new Help Her Heal course. It's actually a group, and it's starting next week. And I wanted to let you know so that if your husband may want to take the Help Her Heal group from me, I would be more than happy to take his name and see if that would be a good fit, right? Because the truth of the matter is, he needs to get as much information about how to make life better for you. And that's what I know to be true. It's his job and his obligation to really make things better for you. Okay. That's what Diane Hobie's here to do. She's here to make your life better. She works for the Alliance for Healing for Partners. It's addiction, relationship, and trauma therapy. It's out of Minnesota. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. She is a certified biblio poetry therapist. And she's a certified sex addiction therapist. So she does it all. She's a CFAT. She works with addicts. So she knows what you're dealing with, and yet she has a special mission to find meaning and transformation for you, the partner, in betrayal trauma. And you can reach her at www.aheartt.com. That's www.aheartt.com. So I am so excited to be talking with her. And I'm excited for you to get the help you need by getting him good help. You can reach me at Carol at CarolTheCoach.com. And the group starts next Tuesday. It's a 12-week series. And it's all about developing empathy to help you heal. But let's face it, men with these kind of issues don't normally know how to be partner sensitive. They don't know how to show empathy. And so we spoon feed that to them in their group, and it meets for 12 weeks. They really bond. Sometimes they say, I want to take the course again. I say, no, I'd like to give it to new people. If I have an open spot, I'll think about it. So I just am thrilled that there's so many resources out there for you. And what we're going to be talking about today is really a mind shift, if you will. So, Dr. Diane Hobey, welcome to Partner Betrayal Recovery Radio. How are you?
Good. Excited to be here.
Oh, me too. And we've been waiting a while for this. And you've got such good information. I mean, you do what I do, and that is I help partners deal with the crisis and figure out what they need to feel safe. But after that, we talk about how you process the feelings and all the betrayals so that you can get over to restoration, which I refer to as post-traumatic growth. So now, obviously, you could have chosen a lot of different topics and a lot of different areas for the people that you work with. What made you come up with meaning and transformation and betrayal trauma? It's not about the nail. What made you come up with that?
Good question. Actually, it stemmed from a funny YouTube clip I had seen in the past that spurred my idea that about the nail being used as a good metaphor for discussing betrayal, meeting, and trauma.
Okay. And why do you see that as a metaphor?
Well, let me tell you why.
Okay.
When we're in pain, pain takes over. And it's all that we can focus on. So the pain, its sources, the resulting brokenness, and without a perspective, it's all we can see and feel. So betrayal and rejection are also like this. So are things like shooting, rape, inequities, organized hate crimes, internet camps, tragic losses, being bullied or silenced for being different. They all freeze us in pain and brokenness. So the pain of tragedy is a piercing, aching pain that does not go away, like a nail. Our bodies will not let it. The pain becomes about survival and safety. If we overlook or forget our pain, we open ourselves to the repetition of its cause. And then when our bodies do not feel safe, our bodies keep sending out warnings and alerts every time anything comes up that might be connected to the pain. A sound, a smell, they may trigger our body into a survival response. And so if we remain in that response, there's little room for healing. So in this funny YouTube clip I saw about couples communication, there's a couple that sits talking to each other, and the woman is talking to her partner about the aching pain in her head and how it impacts everything and snags all her sweaters. The camera then switches the focus to her face, where you see there is a nail in her forehead. So, as is common in communication, her partner, rather than listening, jumps into problem solving. If you remove the nail, the problem is solved. But what she wants is for her partner to listen, to understand, and to connect with her, not simply to pull out the nail. So regardless of our religious belief or background, most people are familiar with the story of Jesus' crucifixion. And so we can use this story to help illustrate the communication dilemma. Most of us can only imagine the pain of being pierced by and then hung by a nail. Imagining this, it is easy to make the nail the focal point of all that went wrong. And that becomes the embodiment of betrayal. When this happens, the solution is clear. If we remove the nail, we take away the pain. Solution solved, then we can get on with life. Yet, we know from our historical perspective that the nailing to the cross was a tiny part of the story. If the nail itself cannot capture the depth nor breadth of betrayal, the selling of the soul for coins, the desire to bypass weighted demands, the lies to hide fear, or even the kiss of betrayal, we can remove the nail, but this cannot remove the forces that drove in the nail or the hole it leaves behind. So to heal from betrayal and so many other wounds, we have to look past the nail, past the hammer, and past the person wielding the hammer. We need to dive into the desert of our sorrow and come to terms with the pain, knowing there's meaning and purpose in survival. This is where living begins. When the focus on the pain and the questions about why this happened turn to a new direction, to what needs to be done now to move forward, to go on living. What must I do to be more than a flawed and broken soul? This is where meaning becomes important. We are meaning-making built beings. Our meanings drive our behaviors, and yet meanings are difficult to define and are rarely discussed. This makes it a very challenging concept. Our behaviors are driven or influenced by force that is difficult to define and almost never discussed. So in the crucifixion story, we have centuries of perspective and reflection to help us move past and to understand the importance of its meaning. Divine love, hope, and the power of transformation. In our own stories of woundedness and betrayal, the pain of a nail can become all-consuming. We do not have the luxury of perspective. That is what makes this journey to living so challenging. It requires the faith or strength and determination to step away from the pain and to see beyond the pain, to move toward transformation. This is where living begins. When the questions turn from why, from the focus on the pain, to what do I need to do now to go on living? To turn from why to now what can feel like a dismissal of the pain and suffering that has gone before us. There is even a fear that in losing the story of pain and suffering, our mere existence will be diminished. I've lived this with my daughter's disability and with my own life challenges, but mostly I've witnessed the stories of so many wounded souls. And even though their stories on the surface vary greatly, the underlying journey toward healing is similar. At some point in time, the only way to heal is forward. We want to plant a new harvest regardless of the desire to keep looking for the roots of what went wrong. Just to be clear, this does not mean... Pardon?
I said, Diane, let me just ask you something, because you're definitely describing the experience, the pain, and you're giving our listening audience already some major hope. I understand that, you know, Patrick Carn said this to us. He said, you know, whenever you have a tragedy, all spiritual evolution says that tragedy does create transformation, and transformation creates giving back. And so I know that you have this amazing ability to tie in your own personal life to betrayal trauma. And in some ways, you know, you equate other traumas, and you just listed a whole bunch, to that of betrayal, like your daughter who has a disability, correct?
Correct.
So now, when you're comparing something that seems like apples to oranges, how do we let our listening audience know that they're totally different experiences, but they're not? I mean, can you share a little bit about why they would not necessarily be totally different experiences?
Tragedy has a way of shattering our way of living and our assumptions and our understanding of the way things are supposed to be. So, for instance, in a relationship, and when there's betrayal trauma, we expect our partner will have our back, that they'll be for us. And we also, in turn, will be there for them. The discovery that our partner has turned away from us and into the arms of another person or a fantasy shatters this assumption. And in so many other tragedies, just like the disability with my daughter, with the accident that happens, all that you hold true and to be important is shattered. So it's this shattering of what we take for granted, just like the meaning of the air we breathe. We take it for granted and we rarely consider it until it's cut off. You know, we might enter a new place where we breathe the air that's so polluted you can chew it or you smell it, it's so strong you choke on it. And it isn't until we're in our own place of fresh air that we realize the meaning of fresh air. The day-to-day meaning of life is much this way. We take what we know as given rather than questioning possibility. And so it isn't until tragedy occurs that we have a chance to push against that. So, for instance, the most profound lesson I learned from meaning came from my daughter and living with the outcome of the accident that left her very severely disabled. Between the ages of 2 and 7, she didn't gain any weight. Of course, this is a critical time to gain weight, but the spasticity of her muscles and the messages from her damaged brain made swallowing a challenge. So eating without aspiration took an incredible amount of time with great efforts to make the food as calorie-rich and as easy to swallow as possible. Whenever we had brought her to her brain injury clinic, the doctors would tell us that life would be so much easier if our daughter had surgery to get a feeding tube. But what does it mean to be a good mom or dad? We feed our children. We sacrifice for them when necessary. This is one of our measures of love. So wanting to be good parents, we could not put our daughter through surgery to make our life easier. We fed our daughter here, there, and everywhere, 5 to 6 hours a day. She never gained weight, and her aspiration pneumonias became more frequent until a new pediatrician with infinite compassion and patience walked us through step by step, test by test, until the feeding tube was the only option. Now when I talk with physicians about understanding their clients' decision process, I tell the story. I talk about the necessity of understanding the meaning that drives behavior. I tell them, had we been told that getting the feeding tube would increase the nutrition to her brain and increase her chances for healing, especially her brain, Do you think we would have waited a minute? Meaning is profound. It drives our behavior, yet we rarely examine it. I had another alternate experience that helped me realize this. There is a young man who spoke in our community about his Asian American experience. And it was profound because I had never thought of this man in any other way than a kind, loving member of our community. Yet he had experienced all this trauma from merely being Asian. So this profound shift in my perspective after I listened to him was also similar to that of my daughter. Because when I look at her and I see her, I feel love. On the rare occasion that my daughter's on stage, still see love and beauty. But then from this alternate perspective, I can see what others likely see, all the signs of her disability, all her limitations. The shift in perspective is painful because so much beauty and love are lost in perspective. So transforming pain and betrayal, we need to stop searching for answers. Stop searching for the whys and start planting and nurturing seeds for growth. This is what we need. This is what's required to heal from betrayal. Betrayal becomes our survival, rooted in understanding and avoiding and distancing ourselves from betrayal. We may be even become trapped in our own betrayal story. But like the resurrection story, the healing comes in transformation, not in the repetition of pain and suffering. So in this story, we're invited to live as an agent of change. We're even encouraged to be responsible for transformation or simply to live differently. For many years, I've thought, oh, wouldn't it be so nice if we could skip over the part of searching for all the answers to what went wrong and for desiring solutions, for wanting to pull out the nail and be done with the problem, or even wanting to ignore adding one more responsibility to our overloaded schedules. But I really don't think this is possible. There would not be a resurrection story if there was not an unjustifiable tragedy. So it is with our own tragedies. We have to be open to be responsible for transformation, to grow possibility, and to become more. So how we tell our story matters. We live according to these stories. Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning wrote about his story and theory about surviving in a time in a concentration camp. He theorized that meanings play a critical role. Before I understood the power of story and healing, I had written a story about my daughter that I called Princess Sophia's Gifts, and I wrote it to help the children in her class to see her rather than just her disability. And I read it to her class the first week of school while she was in grade school. The story did make a difference, but I think more importantly, it transformed my own story. So it gave my daughter the role of teacher, and it helped me move beyond pain and sorrow to live a life that's filled with meaning. It really has shaped my life on purpose. So in our own personal healing, the story of our betrayal is critical. However, it cannot stop there. It is the transformation, the healing, the hope, the desire to live and to become whole, the potential of who we can be. There's so many paths to this point. Even though the pain and suffering cannot be avoided, it can be transformed. Our stories can be one of transformation, of learning to fly with new wings. If we destroy the milkweed that feeds the caterpillar who becomes the butterfly, we will not have many butterflies. So whenever, wherever we may be on our journey, there is always the possibility of transformation. It's not easy. It's not out of reach, but we will have to stretch to reach it.
And so let me just stop you right there, because you and I both know the betrayal trauma is such a deep wound, and it shatters everything about what one believed was true. The environment's not safe. The husband or wife isn't safe. They don't know anything about whether their community is safe, their church, their synagogue. And yet, what do you believe it takes for healing to occur? Because I keep hearing this general theme that it takes a shift in perspective and a way to take oneself out of the victim role of empowerment. So tell me more.
Okay. There is so much when we feel separated, and that's what tragedy does to us. It separates us from shared understandings, and so it leaves us feeling alone, so whatever those communities may be that we are in. So how do we gain connection when we're so separate? And I really do believe that there is an importance in understanding how we are story and how we store our own experience. So when we are in places of pain, we lose direction, or rather, we lose perspective. So in order to regain perspective, that often requires standing outside our zone of comfort and being willing to be open to another voice or another possibility that may be heard. I come from an arts background. I mean, I think I was born loving to do art. And what I tell most of my clients is there is one core ingredient that we need in order to be creative. And creativity, this creativeness, is core to being resilient. So would you happen to know what that core ingredient is, Carol?
No, tell me.
Okay. In order to be creative, we need to be willing to fail.
Okay.
And that is awfully darn scary for a lot of people, because if we are safe all the time, we never create anything new. But creation is critical to creating a new way of being, to learning how to grow. So what does that mean to embrace failure? That's stretching. That's knowing that maybe the argument that we're having over and over again, we can try in a different way. Maybe we can stop. Maybe we can look for a new perspective.
That makes so much sense, and I do think that it does take a partner being able to put their brain back online before they can embrace, if you will, what creativity can do for them, or what shift in their perspective can do for them, or what meaning can do for them. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and how do we do that? So that's the biggest challenge. And really, I've seen so many partners that do a lot of self-damage and the craze to find answers. And believe me, I went on that craze myself and trying to find answers for my daughter. And that's why I really, really don't believe we can avoid that. I think it's part of our journey to look for those answers and to find possibilities. And then at some point in time, we end up realizing that we've been almost like the Wizard of Oz story, where we realize we don't have to go any further than our own backyard. And that realization is the returning to ourself. Who are we? What are we? What are our strengths? And when we have gone through so many things like gaslighting or other betrayal traumas, we lose ourselves in that. We lose who we are and what we are. And so restructuring, restoring who we are, that becomes central to our growth and healing. And we can't wait until we are in a place of everything's back online to start that, because it's partly how we get everything back online. Have you ever seen the... Yeah, it does make sense. Have you ever seen...
But you're saying you don't have to wait till things go back online. Just begin to honor that part of yourself that's moving out of the fog and gaining some clarity, right?
Absolutely. It is part of it. It's a growing.
All right. So then you said, have I ever seen?
Yes, there's another wonderful YouTube clip, and it's called The Backward Brain Bicycle. It is wonderful.
I haven't heard.
So there's this engineer, and his team plays a joke on him. What they do is they take a bike, and you know when you hold the handlebars and you turn the handlebars to the right, your bike wheel goes to the right. Well, what these engineers do is they change it. So when you turn the handlebars to the right, the wheel goes to the left. That is a fabulous example of what we go through when we're trying to rewire our brain. And you can't just get on the bike and ride it with the wheel going in the opposite direction. Whether we are the betrayed partner or the partner who did the betrayal, there's going to be a lot of times when you fall off the bike trying to ride it differently. And after something like betrayal, it's like those handlebars and the wheel direction were switched on you. So it takes a lot of working to get yourself to be able to have your brain wired in a new way so that you can actually ride that bike. If you haven't seen the video, it is a delight. It's like 3 to 5 minutes long. So The Backward Brain Bicycle.
All right, I'll definitely take a look at that. Now, let me ask you, because I want to bring this back to our partners that have been through so much, and you just gave us more hope. You said your brain doesn't have to be all the way online to begin to take in the miracles of transformation and on perception. And you did some research on meaning and transformation. And I know that there had to be a lot of things that got you interested. Obviously, your daughter was one of them. But let me ask you, go ahead.
Yeah, there were a couple research projects I did that stem from it. My first one I was looking at, it was one of these obvious things. You drive around and you wonder, why do some people make their homes accessible when they have a child with a disability and others don't? While I was doing that research, as I was walking out the door after one interview, a mother said to me, off the record, I will place my daughter in a group home before I ever make any changes to my house. That one really hit me hard. So I really had to understand that one more, because I knew that was probably the key to understanding. And what is that for us? It doesn't matter what our condition may be. it could be different in the betrayal, and I see this with my clients a lot. So what is that I won't make any changes to? What is that we put in that category? And so I kept looking at this question, and I kept looking for patterns. I kept trying to understand, how is it we understand something that is so nebulous to us, these meanings that are below the surface that are driving our behavior, and yet we don't know them until we run into them.
And so, yes, you said, why is that? Continue.
You know, there's so many things. Like, there's lack of understanding, for one thing, and it's from both sides. It's the lack of communication. Now, so many partners have told me that they feel separated from and apart from their friends who just don't understand what they're going through. How can you understand that? How can somebody understand what it's like to live with somebody with a severe disability? People will say to me, well, when she was little, she's now almost 34, but when she was little, they'd say, well, does she live in your home? What do they say to partners? Why don't you leave? So there's all these assumptions that we have to make our way past. There's a lot of other things. Well, you didn't pray enough. Or they may say to a partner, I can't tell you how many partners I've had tell me after going to another therapist that they're just not giving their partner enough sex. And that is, oh, my God, what an assumption to put on somebody, which is not the truth at all. So how do we get past these judgments and assumptions that, I don't know, I'm losing my own train of thought here.
One of the things I want to say about that is that those are ignorant people that don't know any better. And I do believe when people know better, they do better. And so we have to be advocates to let pastors and therapists and doctors know that partner betrayal is not about the marital difficulties or differences of a couple, that, you know, addiction that causes partner betrayal is really about a compulsive problem that started way before he ever met her. Now, I'm generalizing, and there might be a few that's not the case, but most addiction starts, you know, in childhood, adolescence, you know, early adulthood, and it started before the relationship ever did. So when you talk about, well, what do we do with people that say, well, what was your sex life like? Do you think you were having enough sex? That is a therapeutic, if it's a therapist, betrayal in and of itself. And, you know, are wise enough to know that. What would you say to a partner experience that kind of misinformation and ignorance?
That's a big challenge, because, you know, you have to do a lot of building of contextual understanding in order to get to the point where a response to that can be healing, besides just saying that is so wrong, that it's not at all right. And then you can get into it. So there's so many critical aspects to working with couples and helping them get past. And I'm saying couples now. Sometimes I work individually, and sometimes I work with the couples. But helping them get past their stuck points. their dug in points. And the assumption that that the man or the woman is not giving enough sex, sex has nothing to do with sex addiction. And that may seem like an odd comment, but not to you because you've heard this a lot. It has to do with our, you know, connection, how we connect to other people. The vast majority of the people that come into my office have had very tragic lives growing up of disconnection, lack of attachment, lack of really learning how to be a kind and loving person, first to ourselves, then to another person.
Yeah. Well, and you have identified lots of misinformation that creates an insecurity in a partner. You know, when partners are told, you know, God didn't give you more than you can handle, and partner betrayal feels like crushing them, that's not helpful. Or you didn't pray enough, you know. You've got to pray for a miracle. You have a lot of, unfortunately, betrayal statements that come from well-meaning professionals. So as we begin to wrap up, you know, I know that you kind of fell into this profession, but you didn't. You opened up your doors to a private practice, and compulsive problematic sexual behavior kept walking in the door, as did partner betrayal. And you were smart enough to know, wow, I think this is where I'm supposed to be, especially because you had some of that in your own family that affected every family member in your family. So what, in terms of parting thoughts, what would you like our listening audience to know about the hope of transformational change?
It is within our reach, but it requires us to lay down the burden of our pain and sorrow in order to be able to be open to what that change is. And that feels like a really abstract and anything but concrete statement. Yet it is probably the most concrete thing we can do, is being able to lay down the burden of expectation and move into, who is it I want to be? Who is it I am becoming? How do I want to shape this relationship? How do I want to be in this world? What am I living for? We have to have vision, mission, purpose, meaning in our life. Without that, we're merely at sea without a paddle.
That makes a lot of sense. And so I want to remind our listeners that I am talking with Diane Hovey, and that's H-O-V-E-Y, PhD. She's a doc, and she definitely has made it her mission to help the betrayed partner look at their life and find some sort of meaning and transformation in it. And if you want to talk to Dr. Diane, you can do so at the email, Dr. Diane, and that's D-I-A-N-E, at A-H-E-A-R-T-T.com. Or you can go to our website, which is www.A-H-E-A-R-T-T.com, and tell me, what's that second T stand for in AHEART?
So the AHEART is Alliance for Healing, and the rest of it is addiction, relationship, and trauma therapy.
Wow. Okay. And so I want to thank you for being a beacon of light in this profession, giving partners, couples, and sex addicts hope that they can find meaning in their lives and they can work through this. And again, as Dr. Patrick Korn said, lots of them will even choose to figure out how they can make a difference in this world as a result of this tragedy that they turned into a triumph. Thanks again so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Uh-huh. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right. She's a woman that believes in my parting thoughts, doesn't she? There will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself and to know that you can get better. You know, I run a partners group. Right now I got 14 women in it virtually. And today's assignment was to decide how are they better at the end of this group series than they were at the beginning. Because, remember, the number one way to find happiness is to ask yourself what is working in my life. And to stay focused on that doesn't mean we don't ignore the threats, the fears, the changes, but to really focus on what is working. And that's what I'm going to leave you with today. If you're interested in a woman's group or you'd like your husband to be in a Help or Heal group, you can call me, well, actually email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. Make it a good week, and we'll see you next week on Morbid Trail Recovery Radio here for APSATS.org.